Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. Today I'm speaking with Kathy Shaw. She's the author of The Campaign Manager. She served three terms as the mayor of Ashland, Oregon. She's consulted and lectured widely on campaign management. I'm really excited to have someone from Oregon on the program, especially someone who's been in public office there, because Oregon's been such a laboratory for democratic experimentation, especially for bioethicists like me. You've got that wonderful Kitzhaber guy out there who did the Oregon rationing system, and you've got your assisted suicide stuff going on. So a lot of interesting things, experiments happening in Oregon.
There really are. They're starting from the bottle bill and some of our landmark policies on keeping Oregon beaches open. We have some of the most, I think, successful land use policies in the nation. The representative that I work for, who's currently running for state senate, was one of the architects of the Oregon Health Plan, to which you referred under Governor Kitzhaber, and also serves on the board of Death with Dignity and is actively involved in that as well.
You have written this book, The Campaign Manager, and it's a wonderful season to be talking about the topics in that book, because we have this election season going on and so much money and attention being focused. So I know that there's probably lots of folks who are interested in the lessons that you've pulled out of your experience. And you have, as one of the things that you talk about in your book, the 10 commandments of a good campaign. Why don't we start with that? What are the 10 commandments?
Well, the first commandment is honor your base. And when I talk about a base, I'm referring to the people that will vote for you even if you're in jail. These are people that just will stick with you no matter what. And while they are not people that require a great deal of time, attention, resources, and money, you certainly must acknowledge their support and talk to them from time to time. The second is to stay on your message. We hear this throughout any size campaign, whether it's local, state, or national. The third is money. Money is thy savior, but in this case, I thought I would make it more parallel with the rest of the commandments. Money generally tracks a winner 80% of the time. I have been outspent on many campaigns by opposition. It's not a requisite for winning, but it certainly helps. Never tell a lie is the fourth commandment. Pretty obvious. Aim at the souls that can be saved is the fifth and possibly one of the most important.
What does that mean?
Well, basically, you have the saints, the sinners, and the savables in any campaign. The saints are your base, as I said, the people who will vote for you no matter what. The sinners are those that will never vote for you. You don't want to spend any time or money there. The remaining are the savables, that all too often refer to swing vote or the switch hitters, the people that will move from one party to the next in the same ballot.
Kathy, let's stop there for a second, because there's been a lot of discussion in this last year about the increasing polarization, political polarization in the United States, and the shrinking of the swing, that there are fewer and fewer, even though there are fewer and fewer people in the country who strongly identify with either party, it seems like there are fewer and fewer people who are up for grabs in this
Correct.
Election season. And you agree with that?
Absolutely. There is a great deal of polarization. I know here in the state of Oregon there is, and it looks like it's pretty rampant nationwide. There are those of us that are just firmly on one side and those of us that are firmly on another, and we just simply are not going to move no matter what, how many pieces of direct mail are sent to us, and no matter what is said. The remaining, basically there's 40% that are locked in on either side. That leaves 20% that are up for grabs. That 20%, and people mistakenly think that independent voters are that. They are anything but independent. They are generally people that are aligned with one party or the other. Swing voters can be found among independents, they can be found among Democrats, and they can be found among Republicans. Within my book, I have a section called Precinct Analysis, which helps campaigns to identify exactly where the swing vote lives. And it's all part of the public information and using past voting tendencies of various precincts, you're able to see how many people within a precinct actually move for between individuals in one party or another. One of the best ways to identify the swing vote is to take a campaign in which somebody in your party absolutely tanked, was defeated 5-1. And then you take somebody, who is remaining, that's your base. That's the people who are going to stay with you no matter what. If you win a race where you lost 5-1, those that have voted for you, you're going to vote for you no matter what. You do the same thing on the other side. You find a candidate who lost in the opposition party by a huge margin. And that percentage that stuck with that candidate is the base vote on that other side. The difference between those is actually the swing vote. You will find it within precincts of any voting district, people who simply don't move. They just stick to party. There will be very, very little swing. And then there'll be other areas, irrespective of registration, where there'll be a huge swing vote. That's where you want to spend your time, your resources, your energy, where you want to place your candidate for the canvas.
Have you ever invested in any psychodemographic marketing, looking at your swing voters in terms of what kind of cultural groups they are, what kind of liquor they buy, what kind of magazines they read? There's a bunch of consultants who do this kind of thing.
I know there. When you get down to the precinct level, that data is not generally available. I do, however, do something very similar. I pull out issue-based campaigns that have been voted on in the areas in which my candidate is running, and I look to see how people in a given precinct have voted in the past for those issue-based campaigns. Oregon is a real measure-happy state. We generally have about 35 issue-based campaigns on a statewide ballot, and of course there'll be lots of local elections for schools, libraries, parks, road improvement, all kinds of things. You can really get an excellent roadmap to the thinking and the voting proclivities of any given precinct simply based on past voting practices. You will find out if a particular area is more supportive of law enforcement or schools, is more supportive of, issues regarding environment versus issues regarding business, or all of those things. And then you can actually package your message to these particular neighborhoods based on what their issues are that mean the most to them, and they will in small areas like where you live and where I live, there are very independent, fiercely independent communities that have very, very different voting records, The registration, I got to say, really does not give you a clear enough indication. Gender and age also will not give you a clear indication. Women voters in my town are very different than women voters two towns over. So it's important to overlay voting practices of candidates and parties with issue-based campaigns to give you the very kind of information that you have indicated that expensive firms will find for you. In addition to that, you can go online and look up information about how certain demographics shop or what programs they watch. Right now, for example, my age group, I'm 50 years old, my age group is very interested in home and gardens, and we watch a lot of TV programming on that, and we buy a lot of things to improve our home and the place that we live in. And that can be a good way to kind of get at the programming that people are most receptive to your message and influence them to vote for your candidate. So there are lots and lots of techniques, all free, that an individual can get at in hopes of positioning his or herself in a campaign.
This is Dr. J. This is Change Surfer Radio that you're listening to. I'm speaking today with Kathy Shaw. She's the author of Campaign Manager. She served 3 terms as the mayor of Ashland, Oregon. Okay, so I think I stopped you at Commandment 5 or 6 of your good campaign commandments. What are some of the others?
Halfway through, you stopped me. Never waste donors' money. This is important in government. It's important in nonprofits. a great way that campaigns will often waste donors' money is they'll send 10 or 11 direct mail pieces to a precinct or an area that is wildly supporting that candidate already. Unfortunately, and if I can digress just for a moment, vendors who produce direct mail make money off of each and every piece that they send. So they're anxious to send as many pieces as possible. Seventh Commandment, do not commit adultery. This is pretty obvious. Voters simply don't like that, and that comes in also under the five cardinal sins of campaigning, which I can go over in a moment.
What's the political analog of adultery?
Running for office is extremely hard on any marriage. The candidate will spend a lot of time.
You're talking about actual adultery.
Actual adultery.
Okay. So yeah. Don't get caught in bed with anybody but your spouse.
Yeah. No. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it's not just, you know, about sleeping around. It's also about the fact that people understand that a spouse is sacrificing a great deal for the candidate. The one that's left at home, whether it's the, you know, husband, wife, or partner, is responsible for all the house chores, or has additional burdens thrust upon him or her. And certainly that involves child care, it involves bringing money in, it involves taking care of just all the nuts and bolts of running a house. And voters, they know that sacrifice is part of it, and they don't think kindly of a candidate who's off kind of philandering while the spouse is at home holding down the fort.
You didn't learn that one the hard way, I take it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, I did. It's a tough thing on a race. And the thing that's also, or excuse me, tough thing on a marriage, the thing is that very frequently, and I'm going to be a little sexist here, but I find this to be more true with men than women candidates, and I have been working on campaigns for 20 years, and this is the third edition of my book, so I've done a fair amount of research and basis on a lot of background information, personal and otherwise. But men who tend to run for office are often looking for adulation within their community. They're looking for the cheers. They're looking for the support. They're looking to kind of fill out who they are. And that happens with women as well. And then there's also the other type of candidate who's actually really, really interested in executing some important programs that will better the community in which he or she lives. If you're looking for that publicly, many, many times people are also looking for that privately, and it just makes sense. You have a lot of especially women who are helping male candidates. They spend a lot of time with them late night hours, and candidates often have a lot of power, which is very attractive to some people. Candidates need to resist this at all times.
So it's the integrity factor.
It is absolutely the integrity factor, and if you're unhappy with your marriage, deal with that, and then move on to other issues. Do not do it simultaneously. It'll cost